My wife cheated to become a law firm partner, so I took down the entire corrupt system behind her. Landon Barrett's life had always been meticulously planned. A man who thrived on structure and precision, he approached both personal and professional matters with the same calculated focus. His ability to anticipate challenges and adapt accordingly had earned him respect in his field and stability at home. Despite his demanding career, he had cultivated a sense of balance, sharing an organized and reliable rhythm of life with his wife, Evelyn. This balance, however, was not without its cracks. Beneath their polished exterior, Landon and Evelyn navigated the unspoken tension of modern life, career ambitions, fleeting moments of connection, and the quiet compromises that accumulate over time. Their well-practiced communication system, a methodical exchange of itineraries and schedules, served as a foundation. Yet even a foundation meticulously built can falter under the weight of unforeseen circumstances. Landon had almost dismissed it, a subtle inconsistency in a routine that usually ran like clockwork. Business had taken him out of town, as it often did, and he had left behind his usual detailed itinerary for his wife, Evelyn. In return, Evelyn kept him informed of her schedule, a system they had perfected over the years. By Thursday morning, his work trip had taken an unexpected turn. The deal he had been negotiating concluded earlier than anticipated, freeing him up by 11 in the morning. His clients, facing a crisis at their East Coast operations, departed abruptly. Landon, a skilled negotiator and a cheerful problem solver, found himself with unexpected time. Originally scheduled to return on Saturday night, he decided to head back early, changing his flight. He was en route to Seattle by early afternoon. While in the air, Landon tried to inform Evelyn of his change of plans. Unable to reach her at home, he called her office instead. The receptionist answered, but her response unsettled him. Evelyn's assistant, Rachel, was out, and Evelyn herself was unavailable, a rarity. Evelyn had told him she'd be in the office all day, yet both she and her assistant were missing. The inconsistency nagged at him, but he brushed it off as a coincidence. By the time his flight landed, the sense of unease had grown. He arrived home around 6:30 in the evening to find the house dark. Evelyn, typically home by 6 in the evening, was nowhere to be seen. Shrugging off his travel fatigue, Landon unpacked, grabbed a quick dinner, and settled in to wait. By 8 in the evening, his concern deepened. Calls to Evelyn's cell phone went straight to voicemail, a sign her phone might be off. Pacing the house, he ran through possible explanations, perhaps a work emergency or an unavoidable delay. Still, the silence gnawed at him. Finally, at 9:20 in the evening, Evelyn called. Her voice carried a mix of relief and concern. She explained that she had called his hotel and, learning he had checked out, grew worried. Landon reassured her, explaining his early return. Evelyn, on her end, shared news of her triumph at work, a promising step toward partnership at her firm, secured through her efforts on a challenging account. Despite her upbeat tone, something in her words felt faintly guarded, a nuance that didn't escape Landon. Evelyn promised to celebrate once he returned Sunday, as planned. Their conversation ended on a warm note, but as Landon hung up, the undercurrent of unease remained. Something in the day's events felt off-kilter, like a puzzle missing a critical piece. Landon sat quietly after the brief call, replaying Evelyn's words in his mind. Her excuses felt hollow, and the lies gnawed at him. Until that moment, he had never doubted their marriage, believing their bond was unshakable. Now, doubt was all he could feel. His stomach churned, and an unfamiliar bitterness settled over him. He went to bed late, unable to silence his racing thoughts. Tossing and turning, the emptiness of the bed Evelyn once called too big felt heavier than ever. By morning, his resolve hardened. Something wasn't right. By 9 in the morning, he was convinced she wasn't coming home that day. He called her office, but the receptionist's cheerful response that Evelyn would be back Monday only deepened his suspicions. Determined to uncover the truth, Landon rummaged through Evelyn's Rolodex, noting down an address. He left their familiar Mercedes in the garage and took their little-used SUV, a vehicle few would recognize. Driving first to her office, he confirmed her car wasn't there before heading to the address tied to Paul Reading, a name Evelyn had mentioned more than once. The address led him to an exclusive neighborhood in Medina, the kind of place tucked behind high brick fences and towering fir trees. Passing by slowly, Landon spotted Evelyn's gray BMW parked neatly by the garage. His heart sank. Pulling over down the street, he sat, gripping the wheel, his vision blurred as he tried to steady his emotions. Unable to stay yet unwilling to go far, he drove into Bellevue for a late breakfast. Picking at a Belgian waffle, he found little comfort in the food, his appetite lost to the whirlwind of his thoughts. After finishing, he drove aimlessly for hours, repeatedly passing by Reading's house. Each time, Evelyn's car was still there, a cruel confirmation of his fears. By the time he returned home, the day felt like a haze of pain and unanswered questions. He couldn't bring himself to cook and instead snacked absentmindedly, trying to distract himself. At 9:45 that night, Evelyn called again. Her tone was cheerful and light. She complained about the lonely bed, but Landon's curt response, "You don't know how lonely it can be," left her momentarily confused. He quickly brushed it off, but the weight of his words lingered. He ended the call quietly, telling her, "I've loved you more than my own life," before retreating to another restless night. By 8 in the morning the next day, Landon sat in the darkened living room, blinds drawn, waiting. At almost 10, he heard her BMW pull into the garage. Moments later, Evelyn walked in, carrying a small overnight bag. She looked fresh, her plaid skirt and sleeveless red blouse immaculate. The cloison necklace he had given her shimmered under the dim kitchen light. Her steps slowed as she noticed the kitchen in disarray, the sink full of dishes, the teapot still warm on the stove. Her gaze darted around the shadowy room, her unease growing. Dropping her bag on a dining chair, she moved cautiously, inspecting every corner. Reaching the fireplace, she grabbed the poker and turned sharply, her eyes scanning the darkened living room. Landon sat silently in his chair, watching her with a mix of pain and resignation. His presence was only revealed when he raised his teacup for a sip. Evelyn froze, startled by the quiet figure in the shadows.
"Landon, you scared me."
"When did you get back?" she stammered, her voice unsteady. His response came slowly, heavy with emotion. "A couple of days." Evelyn's knees buckled, and she sank into a chair across from him, her face pale with shock. "Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you call? Where have you been?" Landon's tone was flat and detached. "I did. Thursday afternoon. You weren't home, and you weren't at the office. Rachel wasn't there either." He paused, letting the silence stretch. "I was here, sitting in this chair, when you called. I spent the night in that big lonely bed you talked about." The room fell quiet again, save for muffled sounds from outside, a car passing, kids arguing, a dog barking. Inside, Evelyn's soft sobs broke the silence. Landon took another sip of tea before continuing. "I don't think the bed you were in Thursday and Friday nights was very lonely. Care to explain? Help me understand what happened." Evelyn's tears fell freely now as she buried her face in her hands.
"Landon, I love you."
"This had nothing to do with us. Please try to see that. It was something I felt I had to do. It doesn't change how I feel about you." His voice hardened. "That makes no sense. How can betraying me have nothing to do with us? What does that even mean?" "It wasn't about you," she whispered through her tears. "It was about repaying Paul for everything he did for me, for us." Landon sat unmoving, watching her crumble. After a long silence, he stood, refilled his cup in the kitchen, and returned. "So, tell me," he said evenly, "why you felt this debt to Reading justified breaking your vows? Did he coerce you? Did he ask for this?" "No," Evelyn exclaimed, her voice cracking. "He didn't ask for anything. He helped me because he believed in me. He's honorable. He never expected this." Landon's brow furrowed. "So, he didn't ask. He didn't suggest it. You offered. Is that what I'm hearing?" "You're twisting this," she said desperately. "It wasn't like that. It wasn't cheap or meaningless. I owed him. It wasn't about you." Landon's voice turned softer but no less pained. "Do you hear yourself, Evelyn? You're telling me it wasn't adultery, that it wasn't meaningless, yet it was something you gave freely to another man. You say it wasn't about me, but how could it not be? You gave the one thing that was most precious to me, you. How do you reconcile that?" Evelyn choked back a sob. "It didn't mean anything, Landon. I'm still the same. I love you. I'm yours." His voice cracked as he spoke. "Evelyn, nothing stays the same. Every choice we make changes us. And you..." He paused, trying to steady himself. "You just spent 2 nights in another man's bed, sharing things that were meant to be ours alone. Do you really think that doesn't change anything?" Evelyn's cries deepened, her words faltering. "Landon, please, I love you. It didn't change how I feel." He shook his head, his gaze fixed on the floor. "Love isn't just a feeling, Evelyn. It's loyalty, trust, and respect. And right now, I'm struggling to find any of those in what you've done." As the conversation continued, Landon rose, placing his teacup on the hearth before retreating to the dining room. He stared out into their sunny, well-kept backyard, a stark contrast to the dark turmoil inside the house. His thoughts spilled out in a low, controlled voice, frustration and sorrow interwoven. He admitted to wanting to lash out, his feelings raw and unfiltered. The idea of confronting Paul Reading filled him with dread, knowing it would only worsen the situation. Landon wondered aloud if Reading now viewed Evelyn as easily accessible, his respect for her likely diminished. Landon's despair was clear as he acknowledged the monumental effort it would take to repair their relationship. Rebuilding trust would demand time, patience, and commitment, things he wasn't sure either of them could give. He proposed a physical separation within their home, suggesting they replace their shared bed with two smaller ones to create space for reflection. It was a small step toward salvaging what remained of their marriage, but Landon doubted whether Evelyn was truly willing to try. Stepping out onto the patio, he left Evelyn sobbing inside, unsure if their relationship could withstand the damage. His final words lingered, a faint glimmer of hope amidst the devastation. He loved her despite it all. 8 months later, Landon found himself sitting in a chic Portland restaurant on a Friday evening. The strains of his crumbled marriage had rippled into his professional life, souring his once strong career. His firm, oblivious to the depth of his personal crisis, had pressured him to take on a critical troubleshooting task shortly after the confrontation with Evelyn. He had refused, prioritizing his failing marriage over professional ambitions, despite promises of promotion and veiled threats involving his rival, Eddie Rivera. When his refusal reached the firm's CEO, Landon made his stance clear with a biting sense of humor. He mocked their attempts to manipulate him, sarcastically blessing Rivera's chances of success and dismissing the firm's petty tactics. His final act was to resign, severing ties with a company that had become another source of disillusionment in his life. With his career behind him and his marriage in tatters, Landon was left to piece together a future from the fragments of his past. Landon had indeed left his previous position and now served as the marketing director and chief troubleshooter at Finn Systems Incorporated, a company directly competing with Chapman Electronics. His move to Finn was no coincidence. He had deliberately chosen the firm to position himself against Chapman, whose president, Victor Chapman, had now grown desperate enough to request a meeting with him. Over the past several months, Landon had systematically outmaneuvered Chapman Electronics, poaching clients and underbidding contracts, to the point where the company was struggling to stay afloat. Layoffs and potential facility closures loomed. Victor Chapman, recognizing the existential threat, was prepared to make Landon an offer to stop the losses and bring him onto his team. Landon, however, had his own plans for how the evening would unfold. The two men exchanged pleasantries over dinner, carefully avoiding the real purpose of their meeting until after the plates were cleared. Then Chapman got straight to the point. He acknowledged Landon's impact on his business, describing the damage in stark terms. Hiring Landon, he argued, wasn't just about improving Chapman Electronics, but about survival. To sweeten the deal, he offered Landon the role of Vice President of Marketing and Business Development, his second in command. "Name your price," Chapman concluded. Landon listened calmly, taking a sip of his wine before responding. He slid an envelope across the table, detailing his terms for compensation and authority. While the document was comprehensive, Landon added that there was one more condition, something not outlined in the paperwork. He wanted Chapman to listen to a story, uninterrupted, all the way to the end. Intrigued and willing to do whatever it took, Chapman agreed. Months earlier, Landon had stood on his patio, staring out at the faint glimmers of Lake Washington through the trees. His mind raced as he tried to process the catastrophic blow Evelyn had dealt to their marriage. Her sobbing, incoherent attempts to explain her betrayal had offered no clarity, leaving him to navigate the wreckage alone. In the face of her silence, he defaulted to what he knew best, problem-solving, treating the crisis like a business challenge. Landon had outlined a tentative plan. He proposed they stay under the same roof, work on rebuilding communication, and sleep separately in the meantime. It was a stopgap approach, a way to regain some control in a situation that felt utterly chaotic. But as soon as he stepped outside to think, doubts crept in. This wasn't a business problem with straightforward solutions. It was their marriage, and it had been fundamentally broken for years. Their relationship had been built on trust and shared faith in one another. Evelyn's betrayal had shattered both. Her insistence that her actions meant nothing and her hollow declarations of love only deepened his despair. A woman he had always admired for her intelligence and insight now seemed incapable of grasping the damage she had done. Each lie, each evasion, chipped away at the foundation of their relationship, and Landon couldn't help but wonder what other truths she was hiding. He had told her they might get through this if they worked hard enough, but even as he said it, he wasn't sure it was possible. His love for her, once unwavering, had been eroded by her actions and the lingering uncertainty of how deep the betrayal ran. As he stood alone on the patio, the enormity of their situation hit him. Trust, once broken, might never be fully restored, and love, no matter how strong, had its limits. Landon was no lawyer, but he remembered a fundamental legal principle: false in one thing, false in all things. It suggested that if a witness was caught lying about one material fact, their entire testimony could justifiably be disregarded. Evelyn's actions and words had embodied this principle to its fullest. She had lied so often and so completely that every claim she made now seemed suspect. Her betrayal had left him feeling dishonored and disoriented, but what troubled him most was her inability or unwillingness to grasp the gravity of what she had done. She had given herself to another man, not under coercion or confusion, but willingly. When pressed for explanations, her defense was hollow. It didn't mean anything. It wasn't about you or us. I felt I had to do it. These words, devoid of remorse, left him reeling. Evelyn's lack of accountability only deepened his despair. Without recognizing the harm she had inflicted, how could she ever work to repair it? Her tears and visible distress felt more like a reaction to being caught than genuine regret. She hadn't apologized or acknowledged the betrayal as fundamentally wrong, and that absence of remorse turned Landon's pain into growing doubt. He thought he knew Evelyn, ambitious, intelligent, and resilient. She had always been someone who could regroup after setbacks. But her greatest strength, her sharp mind and relentless drive, now posed a threat. She was shifting into litigator mode, a persona that thrived on deflection and defense. She would analyze every detail, looking for loopholes, reinterpreting facts to her advantage, and finding ways to avoid admitting fault. It was a strategy that worked in courtrooms but would devastate their already fragile marriage. Landon was not a jury to be persuaded. He was her husband, someone who had been deeply wronged. Until she acknowledged her wrongdoing and showed true remorse, he couldn't see a path forward. From his seat on the patio, Landon watched Evelyn through the window. Her tears had stopped, replaced by a look of determination. She moved purposefully around the house, opening curtains and letting sunlight flood the rooms. As she sat by the window, her face set with resolve, Landon could almost hear her thoughts, reviewing every word exchanged since Thursday night when her lies first became clear. She was preparing for battle, strategizing her next move. Landon's heart sank further. He could see her mind working, not on reconciliation, but on crafting a defense. What he needed from her, a sincere admission of guilt, was unlikely to come. Every moment she spent scheming chipped away at his hope, and with it another piece of the love he still clung to. Evelyn's sudden movement caught his attention. She picked up the cordless phone, glancing outside as if sensing his gaze, then disappeared into the dining room, out of his line of sight. Suspicion surged within Landon. He walked to the patio phone, positioned discreetly out of view. When he picked up the receiver, he didn't hear a dial tone or dialing. She hadn't yet connected the call. Acting quickly, he unscrewed the mouthpiece and disabled the microphone, ensuring she wouldn't be able to transmit her voice. He pulled out his cell phone, a high-tech model with advanced features, and switched it to record, holding it against the earpiece of the patio phone. He prepared to capture whatever conversation Evelyn was about to have. If she was calling Paul Reading or anyone else, he would know. This moment wasn't about spying for its own sake, but about seeking the truth she had been so reluctant to share. Evelyn's actions had forced him into this corner, and he was determined to uncover the reality behind her betrayal, no matter how painful it might be. As Landon listened, Evelyn's voice came through the line, followed by the sound of rapid speed dialing. A man answered after a couple of rings, his tone casual, but Evelyn immediately interrupted him, her voice tense and hurried. She launched into an explanation, admitting their affair had brought her marriage to the brink of collapse. She confessed to Paul that Landon had been home since Thursday, listening in silence as she lied during their phone conversations. She recounted how she had complained about being alone in their bed while he was in the house, hearing every word. Paul's shocked response was cut short as Evelyn detailed the moment she realized the truth Landon had known all along. He had said nothing, quietly observing, building his case just as he did in his professional life as a negotiator. She described his ability to mask his emotions, using patience as a tool. This realization left her rattled. Paul, in disbelief, questioned how Landon could have stayed silent. Evelyn explained that he was trained to deal with liars, to remain calm and controlled until he had the upper hand. His calculated restraint had allowed him to confront her with devastating precision when she returned that morning. She admitted to Paul that her attempts to explain herself to Landon had fallen apart. She had fumbled, offering weak excuses about repaying Paul for his professional help. Even as she spoke, knowing how hollow her words sounded, her voice cracked as she confessed the fear she felt, knowing Landon might have already connected Paul to the betrayal. Paul's concern deepened. He asked if Landon was violent. Evelyn hesitated, unsure. She mentioned his military medals, artifacts of a past he rarely discussed, and admitted she had never seen him angry until now. This situation was uncharted territory for them both. She worried aloud about what might happen if Landon uncovered more of her secrets, including another affair with someone named Scott. Paul's unease turned to panic as he contemplated the potential fallout. He muttered about involving his business partners, desperate to devise a plan to deal with Landon. Their conversation trailed into tense strategizing, but for Landon, the damage was already done. Each word he overheard confirmed his fears and intensified his sense of betrayal. The silence was broken only by Evelyn's uneven breathing. Paul's voice, steady but tense, offered a suggestion. Since Landon was a negotiator, perhaps he could be reasoned with. Paul suggested approaching the situation pragmatically, likening it to a legal dispute where money and discussion could potentially smooth over the damage. His idea was to involve the partnership, creating a neutral professional setting where cooler heads might prevail. Evelyn's response was sharp and incredulous. The idea of facing Landon alongside Paul and the others, the very people who had perpetuated her betrayal, seemed absurd. She was terrified of Landon's growing anger and unsure how to proceed. She admitted Landon had already begun distancing himself emotionally, doubting her, and making it clear that their relationship was on precarious ground. She was desperate to salvage her marriage, but the web of lies and omissions she had woven seemed impossible to untangle. As Paul pressed for details about her interactions with Landon, Evelyn revealed her fear of his perceptiveness. Landon's ability to read between the lines and deduce the full extent of her actions left her feeling exposed. She confessed her growing dread over how much he already suspected, including the possibility of uncovering her other indiscretions. The partnership's so-called fast-track system, designed to reward associates in exchange for personal compromises, was now threatening to destroy everything she valued. Evelyn's desperation turned to anger as she reminded Paul of his assurances that the system wouldn't harm her marriage. She admitted to secretly recording conversations where Paul and another partner, Marjorie, had explained the arrangement. Those tapes, she warned, would serve as retribution if her world completely unraveled. Paul, momentarily shaken, tried to regain control. He rationalized their past actions, claiming the system had never caused issues before and that dissenters were usually silenced through buyouts or veiled threats. He pivoted to damage control, focusing on minimizing what Landon might know. Evelyn confirmed she hadn't explicitly admitted to the affair but feared Landon would infer the truth based on her demeanor and behavior. Paul proposed a fabricated story to downplay their relationship and buy time. His narrative involved a series of innocent events, shared exhaustion from a challenging project, mutual support in a moment of vulnerability, and an escalating series of missteps fueled by alcohol. The story would frame their actions as misguided but not explicitly intimate, allowing room for plausible deniability. He emphasized that they needed to act quickly, involve the other partners, and present a unified front. Evelyn, trapped between fear and guilt, listened as Paul laid out his plan, but the cracks in their strategy were already forming. The lies they had spun to justify their actions were unraveling, and with each word, the consequences of their betrayal loomed larger. The call ended with Evelyn sounding desperate and Paul trying to reassure her. Paul had suggested they spin a story to placate Landon, a fabricated narrative involving long work hours, innocent missteps, and absolutely no physical betrayal. Evelyn, while doubtful, reluctantly agreed to go along with the plan. Paul assured her that with the backing of the law firm's partners, they could control the damage. He framed it as a business issue rather than a moral failing, emphasizing the stakes for the firm and its reputation. As Landon listened, he felt his love for Evelyn crumble under the weight of her lies. The phone call had confirmed his worst fears. Evelyn had betrayed him, lied to him, and intended to continue deceiving him with carefully constructed falsehoods. Anger and pain filled the growing void where his love had once been, and he knew their marriage was beyond repair. Taking a walk around the neighborhood to calm himself, Landon reflected on the toxic system Evelyn had willingly participated in, a twisted quid pro quo designed to fast-track ambitious associates to partnership. He couldn't fathom how she had justified it, but her eagerness to comply, contrasted with others' refusal, stung deeply. Evelyn's relentless ambition had destroyed everything they had built together. When he returned home, Evelyn asked for a day to gather herself before providing an explanation. Landon, barely holding his emotions in check, nodded. He packed a bag, informing her curtly that he would be staying elsewhere. Her frightened, defeated expression as he left was burned into his mind. At his hotel, Landon reviewed the recording he had made of the phone call. While the memo was short, it captured enough: admissions of betrayal, the outline of the firm's unethical partnership track, and Evelyn's culpability. He grimly concluded that Washington State's divorce law, which only required proof of an irretrievably broken marriage, would be on his side. The recording might also support legal action against the firm. Meanwhile, the law firm partners convened at Paul's house. After dismissing Paul's idea of framing the affair as a minor dalliance, Marjorie Chapman crafted a more elaborate story. They would claim Evelyn had been involved in a secret government project tied to her work on the Brigham account. The project, supposedly urgent and classified, required 2 days of seclusion with Paul and a small team in a remote hotel. Evelyn's evasive phone calls, they decided, would be explained as necessary secrecy. The partners storyboarded every detail, aligning their fabricated timeline with Evelyn's past statements. The lies were polished, consistent, and designed to exploit Landon's knowledge of Evelyn's ambition. They would portray her actions as professional dedication rather than personal betrayal. Evelyn reluctantly accepted the new narrative, though doubts lingered. As Marjorie reassured her, the focus was on damage control. The firm couldn't afford a scandal, and Evelyn's marriage was collateral in their strategy to protect their reputations. For Landon, however, the truth was already clear, and no manufactured story could salvage what had been irrevocably broken. Landon's accusations had been piercing and specific, calling out Evelyn's betrayal in stark terms. He demanded answers, asking how her actions, cheating on him and breaking her vows, could possibly have nothing to do with their marriage. Evelyn, caught off guard, had deflected rather than denied, insisting it wasn't adultery and claiming her actions were something Paul deserved. Her lack of a firm denial hung in the air, making Landon's frustrations even sharper. He pointed out the contradictions in her words, accusing her of giving away what he valued most, her intimacy, which she had promised was his alone. As he pressed her further, asking how many nights she had spent with Paul and whether others had been involved, Evelyn remained evasive. Landon made it clear that no justification, such as balancing the scales by him cheating in turn, would ever fix this. Fidelity, he told her, wasn't something cheap enough to be traded, and two wrongs wouldn't make anything right. Her inability or refusal to deny his allegations was damning, leaving him with more questions than answers. Recognizing the seriousness of Evelyn's predicament, the law firm brought in Dr. Lillian Crane, a well-known psychologist who owed the firm for defending her against plagiarism accusations. Dr. Crane helped construct a new narrative. Evelyn's lack of denial was attributed to psychological distress. According to this story, Evelyn, overwhelmed by back-to-back high-stress projects, had reached an emotional breaking point. When Landon accused her, she hadn't truly heard or processed his words. Instead, she had been mentally frozen, able only to repeat vague assertions about her gratitude toward Paul and her love for Landon. Dr. Crane assured them that the frozen state explanation was backed by psychological research. She even offered to testify on Evelyn's behalf, reinforcing the narrative that Evelyn's failure to refute Landon's accusations stemmed from emotional overload, not guilt. The group rehearsed this version of events tirelessly, preparing Evelyn for any questions Landon might ask. They built a cohesive story involving a secret professional project and emphasized that no inappropriate behavior had occurred. The psychologist's testimony and backing from the firm's partners gave Evelyn a slim but plausible chance to salvage her marriage. Evelyn found some belief in the plan, preferring it to the humiliating truth. The partners assured her full support, including her immediate promotion to partner without further trials, contingent on her maintaining the cover story. When Landon returned on Sunday night, Evelyn asked him to sit with her in the kitchen. She claimed she was ready to tell him everything. Landon, his face etched with pain, reached across the table and gripped her hands. His voice was firm and unyielding. "Evelyn, before you say anything, understand this. If you tell me the absolute truth, no lies, no evasions, I will do everything I can to work through this with you. We can go to counseling and I'll fight to save our marriage. But if you lie to me even a little, we're done. Assume I already know everything. Your job is to confirm it, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Anything less, and this marriage is over." Evelyn stared into his eyes, the weight of his words pressing down on her. Her carefully rehearsed story, supported by professionals and colleagues, was ready, but so was Landon, unflinching and resolute. Landon's tone was unwavering as he locked eyes with Evelyn, emphasizing the stakes. Their marriage's survival depended on honesty, nothing less. Evelyn, armed with a rehearsed and supposedly airtight story, began detailing her involvement in a secret project that required her to stay in a hotel with Paul and other colleagues. She framed her actions as repayment for Paul's help on a previous account, downplaying any personal connection. Landon listened silently, his expression unreadable, as Evelyn described the project's logistics. When he casually asked about transportation and whether anyone had carpooled, Evelyn confidently denied it, sticking to her narrative. She explained how the project had kept her away and why she'd lied about being at home during their phone calls. Then Landon dismantled her story with cold precision. He revealed that he had driven past Paul's house multiple times on Friday, each time spotting her car parked there. Producing time-stamped photos from his phone, he proved Evelyn hadn't been at a hotel but at Paul's home for hours, alone. Caught, Evelyn sat in silence, her composure crumbling. Landon calmly called to confirm a rental apartment and an appointment with his attorney. Without raising his voice, he declared their marriage over. He reminded her of his demand for the truth, lamenting her inability to give it. Gathering a suitcase and his laptop, he prepared to leave, delivering a final cutting remark, "I loved you." I would have done anything for you, but you couldn't even stop lying for 1 hour. I hope the partnership was worth it. Later, at dinner with Victor Chapman, Landon recounted his story, outlining Evelyn's betrayal and her firm's unethical practices. Chapman, visibly angered, initially dismissed the tale as fabrication, especially since his wife Marjorie was deeply implicated. Rising to leave, Chapman accused Landon of smearing his wife's reputation and declared there would be no job offer. But just before reaching the door, Chapman hesitated. He turned back, sat down, and demanded an explanation for why Landon would spin such an outrageous tale. Landon met his gaze and calmly responded, challenging Chapman to identify any falsehoods. He reiterated the key points: Evelyn's ambition to make partner, her compromises to do so, and Marjorie's role as both mentor and enabler. Chapman bristled at the insinuation that Marjorie had participated in such schemes. Landon countered with a pointed question: would Marjorie swear before God that none of it was true? His words left Chapman visibly unsettled. Landon then revealed his true aim. For months, he had sought something from Marjorie, something she had refused to give. Unable to reach her directly, he orchestrated this meeting, knowing Chapman would take his concerns seriously. "I needed you to ask her for me," Landon admitted. He concluded the evening with a parting jab: "It's a shame we couldn't work together. I could have turned your company into a real competitor, but for now, you're easy to beat. Thanks for dinner." Landon left, his mission accomplished, leaving Chapman with more questions than answers and doubts about the integrity of those closest to him. Late that night, Landon's phone rang. It was past midnight, but sleep continued to elude him. The wounds of betrayal were too fresh, and counseling had done little to ease the torment of losing the woman he once believed to be the love of his life. The voice on the line was unexpected. Marjorie Chapman introduced herself and, with evident desperation, revealed that she was sitting outside his apartment building. Her tone was raw with emotion. "An hour ago, I would have run you down if you crossed the street in front of me," she admitted. "But now, I think you're my only hope. May I come up?" Landon buzzed her in. He remembered her from past office gatherings, a tall, poised woman whose elegance had contrasted with her husband Victor's diminutive stature. They'd seemed deeply in love, but the woman who now entered his apartment was unrecognizable. Disheveled, her hair a mess, her face streaked with tears and smeared makeup, she carried the same haunted look Landon had seen on Evelyn's face when their marriage fell apart. After offering her coffee, they sat across from one another. Marjorie began hesitantly, explaining her aimless drive through the city after a confrontation with Victor. "I knew Victor was meeting you, and I was worried. Your name's been coming up for months. I avoided you when you tried to meet with me, even threatening a restraining order." She paused, visibly struggling, then continued. "When Victor got home, he was furious. He asked if I had compromised my dignity to make partner at Reed, Lydia, and Grant. I denied it, but he didn't believe me. That's when I realized, how could he? I've lied to him every day for 17 years, every day since I was involved with Scott Reed, Paul Reading, and the other male partners to secure my position. Every time I let him think I'd been faithful, I lied. And yes, even when I gave in to those younger associates who wanted to become partners, I lied. Victor saw the truth on my face." Marjorie's voice cracked as she described Victor's demand that she swear her innocence before the altar of their church. "I couldn't do it," she admitted. "I've confessed my sins to my priest, but I couldn't lie to God at the altar. I refused, and Victor left. He said our marriage was over. I think he's staying at the country club. I couldn't bear the silence of the house, so I drove around. Now I'm here." Her gaze was pleading. "You went through this with Evelyn. Now it's happening to me. I know I don't deserve your sympathy, but I have to ask, what can I do to save my marriage?" Landon regarded her with a somber expression. "Call me Landon," he said simply. She nodded, offering her first name in return. "Claire." "Claire," he began, "you already know the answer. The first thing you must do is what Evelyn refused to do. Tell Victor the truth, all of it. No half-truths, no sugarcoating. Explain what you did and why. If Victor truly loves you, there's a chance, but it will take time, patience, and counseling. Even then, forgiveness isn't guaranteed. Betrayal like this cuts deep, Claire, and you have to understand the gravity of what you've done." Claire's voice trembled as she replied, "I know I'll have to crawl on my knees to him, and I'm terrified of what he'll think of me, but you said I need to tell him the truth first." "What did you mean by that?" Landon's tone hardened. "You and the partners at Reed, Lydia, and Grant destroyed my marriage. You mentored Evelyn, guided her into that disgusting system, and convinced her it was acceptable. I lost the only woman I've ever loved because of the culture you helped create. I can never get her or my marriage back, but I can have revenge. That revenge includes exposing your firm and those partners for what they are. You were an active participant in my pain, Claire, so no, I'm not sorry for what this has done to you. Claire's eyes widened, but she didn't protest. Landon continued, You were the one who explained to Evelyn that sleeping with the male partners was part of the path to partnership. You sold her on the idea that it wouldn't harm her or us. Do you deny it, or are you ready to admit your role in this mess? Claire looked down, defeated, for the first time unable to summon a defense. She took a deep breath, her voice trembling with emotion. I won't deny it. I made my deal with the devil. I slept with partners to secure my position, all the while convincing myself I could make it up to Victor by loving him more. I thought I could bury the guilt by being the perfect wife, but the cracks started to show. He grew suspicious when I suggested things in the bedroom I'd never been open to before, but I pushed past it. I told myself the ends justified the means. She exhaled sharply, her guilt visible. When it was Evelyn's turn, I coached her on what to do, how to hide it from you, and how to justify it to herself. I told her love would balance the scales. That was a lie, of course. I knew it was a lie, because my love for Victor never erased my own betrayal. Her voice broke as she recalled the moment everything fell apart. When Paul called to tell me you'd uncovered the truth, I felt sick. I tried to help fabricate a cover story, but I knew it was useless. Evelyn's face said it all. She knew her marriage was over, and so did I. That's when I realized my day of reckoning would come, and now here I am. Landon listened silently, then nodded. You already know what you need to do. Tell Victor the truth, all of it. Hold nothing back. It's your only chance. I can't promise he'll forgive you, but if there's any hope, it starts with complete honesty. Then seek counseling or help from your church. But understand this, even if he forgives you, things will never be the same. Claire nodded slowly, her guilt weighing heavily. I will tell him, but Landon, you said you want to destroy the firm. That will hurt a lot of innocent people. Landon's gaze hardened. I can't let the firm continue its predatory practices just because it employs innocent people. There have been plenty of innocent employees in corrupt organizations. Should we have kept places like Enron operational for the sake of jobs? No, Claire. This firm has ruined lives and I won't let it continue. If there's a way to help the innocent, I'll try, but my focus is bringing down the system. Claire admitted Victor would likely support such a mission, given his anger at the firm. She then revealed their financial stability and tentative plans to retire. If Victor forgives me, I'll resign and leave the firm to start over with him. Landon shook his head. No conditions, Claire. I need your help regardless of what happens with Victor. You're in a position to expose the system, and if I'm going to dismantle it, I need you on board. Claire met his gaze and agreed. I'll help. What do you need from me? I need proof, Landon said. Documents, testimony, evidence of how the partnership system works, and how the intimate expectations are presented. I want to show the courts and the public how young associates were coerced, how it ruined lives and marriages. Evelyn bears responsibility, but the firm created the environment that lured her in. The focus needs to be on that. Claire agreed, but cautioned. One witness isn't enough. I'll testify, but I've discredited witnesses myself in the past. Do you have anything else? There are women who left the firm rather than participate, Landon said. They were paid off and threatened, but I think some might come forward if they see we have a strong case. Anger doesn't fade easily, but to get them on board, we need something solid. Claire nodded. We need more than just my testimony. We'll get it, Landon said, his tone resolute. The truth always leaves a trail. It's time we followed it to the end. Landon loaded a disc into his laptop and played a recording for Claire. It was an 8-minute clip he had captured after confronting Evelyn. The recording detailed Evelyn's admission of repeatedly lying to Landon during their phone calls, unaware he had been listening. She revealed her guilt over her actions and her reliance on taped conversations with Paul Reading and Marjorie Chapman as leverage during the partnership arrangement. Claire listened closely, analyzing its potential legal strength. While acknowledging that the recording might face challenges in court, she deemed it admissible since it was recorded on Landon's property. She noted that its authenticity could be defended with voice analysis. She then revealed her own piece of evidence, a recorded conversation with Scott Reed from years earlier. In it, Scott outlined the firm's rite of passage for partnership, explicitly requiring intimate favors in exchange for advancement. He had assured Claire it was consensual, discreet, and would never result in mistreatment. Claire had initially been shocked but succumbed to the pressure, rationalizing it as harmless. She had recorded the conversation as a safeguard in case the promise of partnership wasn't honored, but had never used it until now. The two discussed the financial implications of taking on the firm. Landon shared that he had saved enough during his marriage to cover significant legal costs, estimating $900,000 available after a potential divorce settlement. Claire acknowledged that while litigation could be costly, the firm would likely settle to avoid a public scandal. She pointed out the inevitable fallout, intimate misconduct lawsuits, disbarment motions, and a loss of clients that could destroy the firm if the truth came out. Despite her agreement to help, Claire admitted her inner conflict. She had spent her career at the firm and struggled with the idea of dismantling what she had helped build. She defended the partners, claiming they saw the system as a consensual rite of passage and had maintained professional respect afterward. Yet she also recognized the harm caused and her role in perpetuating it. Landon remained resolute, reminding Claire of the lives and relationships destroyed by the system. Faced with the weight of her choices, Claire made her decision. She would help Landon expose the firm and stop the cycle of exploitation, no matter the cost. Landon leaned back, exhaling deeply. He addressed Claire, knowing she and Victor had a daughter finishing law school. When Claire confirmed, proudly mentioning Carol as the pride of their lives, Landon pressed further. He painted a stark hypothetical Carol, working at Reed, Lydia, and Grant, facing the same rite of passage as Evelyn. The mental image was brutal, forcing Claire to confront the full weight of her complicity in the firm's unethical practices. Shaken, Claire retreated to the bathroom to wash away the smeared makeup and tears. When she returned, she looked worn and aged, the weight of the conversation evident. She resolved to resign from the firm, citing personal reasons, though she wished she could share her plans with Victor. She admitted he wasn't taking her calls after their confrontation. Landon offered to reach out to Victor the next morning and update him on their discussion, believing it might open the door for reconciliation. Landon then mentioned Evelyn, suggesting Claire warn her to leave the firm before the impending fallout. To his surprise, Claire revealed that Evelyn had already resigned months after their separation, explaining her decision as a step toward amends. Evelyn had joined Dunn & Associates, a firm without the hierarchical partnership system. Further, Claire disclosed that Evelyn had ensured no conflict of interest regarding Landon's legal representation by Catherine Dunn. Despite the separation, Evelyn had taken care not to complicate his case. When Claire asked why Landon hadn't initiated divorce proceedings, his response was candid. He admitted that severing the final tie felt unnecessary. Evelyn was the love of his life, and he had no intention of marrying again. Their marriage, or lack thereof, was little more than a formality to him now. The following day, Landon contacted Victor, who agreed to meet with Claire after hearing her plans. In a secluded spot near the golf course, Claire unburdened herself, confessing everything with raw honesty. She apologized, begged for forgiveness, and shared her intention to resign and join Landon in exposing the firm's corrupt practices. This revelation seemed to rekindle some life in Victor, and they continued their conversation over dinner. By Sunday, the couple went on a long drive, extending their dialogue and unearthing buried emotions. Eventually, Victor returned home, and they began the difficult process of rebuilding trust. The differences between Victor and Claire's relationship and Landon and Evelyn's were stark. Victor and Claire shared nearly 30 years of history, with a deep bond formed through shared experiences. Their daughter Carol was also a significant factor. They both wanted to spare her the pain of a fractured family. Finally, Victor's own infidelity from years earlier, though brief and confessed, tempered his ability to hold the moral high ground. Unlike Landon, whose betrayal had been one-sided, Victor carried his own guilt, making reconciliation more feasible. Together, Victor and Claire committed to working through the pain, determined to salvage what remained of their marriage. The campaign to dismantle Reed, Lydia, and Grant began with Claire Chapman's abrupt resignation. She walked into Scott Reed's office and handed him an unsealed envelope containing a single sentence, her immediate resignation. Ignoring his gestures for her to sit, she stood silently as he read the letter. His expression shifted to shock as he realized the gravity of her decision. Claire confronted him directly, pointing out the damage the firm's practices had caused. She referenced her own moral compromise years ago and revealed that Victor, her husband, had demanded her resignation as part of their attempt to save their marriage. She accused Reed of perpetuating the toxic system, highlighting the recent departure of another young associate, Maya Alvarez, who refused to compromise her integrity. She made it clear that leaving the firm was not just personal, but also a matter of accountability. As she left, she tossed her ID badge under the receptionist's desk, signaling the end of her tenure. Back in his office, Scott Reed instructed his secretary to summon all the partners for an emergency meeting. Staring blankly out the window, he braced for the inevitable fallout. Landon Barrett, alongside Claire, launched a multi-pronged legal attack. Landon filed for divorce, naming Paul Reading and Scott Reed as co-respondents, and pursued civil suits against the firm and its partners, accusing them of orchestrating coerced adulterous relationships that destroyed his marriage. The suits were framed as tort actions, aiming for significant damages. Together with Claire, Landon also filed intimate misconduct charges and petitioned the Washington State Bar Association for disciplinary action against the implicated lawyers. The firm scrambled to mount a defense but found itself cornered. Attempts to discredit Landon and Claire failed. Both had meticulously clean records. Meanwhile, former associates and employees began coming forward, corroborating allegations of the firm's unethical partnership fast-track system. Rumors spread that Landon possessed incriminating recordings.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
Getting a climate of fear among the partners. Legal battles ensued, but the mere exposure of the allegations caused irreparable damage. The firm's reputation plummeted, clients abandoned them, and associates fled. Facing a dwindling client base and mounting legal costs, Reed, Lydia, and Grant were forced to shut down. Even after the firm's collapse, Landon didn't stop. He targeted individual partners, using evidence of their misconduct to negotiate settlements. He deliberately waited to see if legal actions from their spouses would drain their assets, ensuring maximum financial accountability. The fallout spread to the partners' personal lives. Catherine Reading and Valerie Reed returned from Europe and filed for divorce, both successfully securing significant portions of their husbands' remaining assets. The Washington State Bar Association reviewed the evidence provided by Landon and issued severe sanctions. Paul Reading, Scott Reed, and the remaining implicated partners were censured and disbarred for 3 years, with little hope of reinstatement. What began as a personal quest for justice turned into a reckoning that toppled one of the most prominent law firms in the state. Landon's unrelenting pursuit of accountability ensured not only the downfall of Reed, Lydia, and Grant, but also a clear message. Those who exploit power for personal gain would face consequences. Though the legal battles and public exposure took their toll, they ultimately brought closure to the lives the firm had disrupted, paving the way for reform and justice in a deeply flawed system. Paul Reading and Scott Reed both realized their legal careers were irreparably over. Their divorces had drained their finances, leaving them with modest annuities that were insufficient for comfortable retirements. Paul relocated to a warmer, more affordable area, earning an income by ghostwriting legal research papers for students through an online service. However, a tipster exposed the service as a hub for academic dishonesty, and one of Paul's papers became evidence in a criminal case. Convicted of fraud, with his prior suspension from the bar factoring into his sentencing, he was handed a 3 to 6 year prison term. While incarcerated, Paul contracted a terminal illness, reportedly through no fault of the institution, though prison authorities denied any misconduct. He died of complications related to his illness before completing his sentence. Scott Reed moved to Arizona and took a position as a paralegal assistant for a Native American tribal council. While he wielded more influence than a typical paralegal, his inability to practice law remained. Scott's new life, however, was uneventful and free from the turmoil that plagued Paul, largely because Claire Chapman had asked Landon Barrett to let him be. After dismantling Reed, Lydia, and Grant and ensuring the implicated partners faced consequences, Landon stepped back from his relentless quest for justice. He began working for Victor Chapman, who had reconciled with Claire, as a troubleshooter and consultant. Landon streamlined Chapman Electronics, transforming it into a top-tier competitor in its industry. 3 years later, when Victor retired, he and Claire purchased a bed and breakfast on the Kitsap Peninsula. Victor sold his stake in the company to Landon, allowing Landon to transition into a quieter role as an overseer, delegating daily operations to younger managers. Landon never reconnected with Evelyn, who continued her career with Catherine Dunn. Eventually, Evelyn married a family friend of the Dunns and relocated to the Midwest, but the marriage ended after 3 years when she discovered her husband's affair. Moving to California to be closer to her family, Evelyn opened a small family law practice. She never remarried and carried the weight of her choices, accepting loneliness as her penance. Though she still loved Landon, she knew he would never forgive her. For several years, Landon dated casually, uninterested in deep attachments. That changed when he met Janice, a divorced mother of two, after stopping to help her with a broken-down car. Their connection grew, and Landon came to love her children as his own. After a year of growing closer, they decided to live together. While the state didn't recognize common law marriages or civil unions for heterosexual couples, they eventually married to protect their rights as a family. Before committing fully, Landon shared the full story of his past and the vengeance he pursued against Reed, Lydia, and Grant. Janice, though taken aback by the darker side of Landon's history, saw no reason to fear him for herself or her children. Their marriage was steady and brought them happiness, though it lacked the passionate depth Landon once felt for Evelyn. Nonetheless, Landon and Janice built a fulfilling life together, marked by mutual respect and contentment, as Landon finally left behind the chaos and pain of his earlier years.